We know that's Harden. He's one of the greatest scorers this game of basketball has ever seen. And he's been that for the last several years.
Yeah! NBA Straya. How you going? That's right, it's NBA Straya. It's Wednesday. Wednesday, am I right? Hump day, July 15. And I'm your host, James Clements. I'm a writer sometimes. A Rolling Stone, Triple J, a junkie, Red Bull Mag, and literally whoever else wants to pay me. That's sweet, sweet folding stuff. I'm here in Larry Armour Studios and increasingly filthy. Larry Armour Studios. There's empty boxes from Old Mate's treats. There's a breakfast right here, the remnants of that. There's a tissue. There's a mandarin peel right next to me. Jesus, Old Mate, what are you doing? Anyway, I'd usually be letting you know who's doing what, where they're doing it, why they're doing it, of course, who's doing it better than Lonzo Ball in the NBA today. But look, NBA season's still suspended. It's 126 days without NBA basketball. So in the meantime, we're bringing in yet another special guest for you this week for a bit more Fuck It Wednesday action. It's pretty good. We've had gold medal winners, NBA champions, NBL champions, platinum recording artists, AFL players, pro gamers, TV stars, radio hosts, comedians. And this week, it's another NBL champion and also TV star, Peter Hooley. That's right. Hooles is on here to talk sideline reporting and his wildly interesting, fascinating career. It's really, really, really fun. It's a great chat with Pete. Love him as a basketballer, as a talker, as a TV guy. He's really fun, so enjoy that one. We've also got a bit of yeah-nahs with Hools. We've also got some top fives this week, which is top five reasons to break the NBA bubble, and a very, very awesome and fun NBA Australia time machine where we go back to 1999. Bloody real. We're going to have a whole bunch of news as well about the bubble and everyone arriving there at the moment. So let's get stuck into it, shall we? This is NBA Straya episode 446. Can you believe that? I can't. Let's go.
This is Matthew Dellavedova and you're listening to NBA Straya.
Watch out for the Shaq attack!
You better! Well, you better watch out for the attack of that Rona. If you're Rusty Westbrook, be still my heart. Rusty has come down with that Rona. But also watch out for, flying balls if you're Rondo. Classico. Also better watch out for Uber Eats drivers if you're Rashawn Holmes. That's right, let's start today's show the way we start every show here at NBA Australia with the daily whip around, which is now the weekly whip around, I guess. That's right, Rondo copped a broken thumb in one of the first Lakers practices in the bubble, out 6 to 8 weeks. Brutal scenes there for Rondo. They're now without Avery Bradley and Rondo. JR and Deion Waiters are just sitting there, just rubbing their hands together going, yes, I can feel it. It's my time. I mentioned that Rusty Westbrook has that Rona. He didn't travel with the Rockets to Orlando, and nor did James Harden. And there were reports earlier that Harden has that Rona and apparently been throwing pool parties at his place back in Arizona. Look, James, I don't know how many times we have to tell you, mate. I don't know if it's fucking smart to have a million of your closest friends, strippers, come by and hang out in your fucking pool in the middle of a pandemic. But anyway, he did apparently just arrive in Orlando and will have to go into quarantine. So it seems like he might not actually have that Rona. Whereas Rusty has officially tested positive and will hang out and not join the team in Orlando until he's all good. So, interesting stuff. It's a bit terrifying. It's a bit weird. Everything's all up in the air. And look.
Interesting stuff.
It really is. Two of the 322 players have been tested in the bubble have turned a positive test in. And they hadn't actually named anybody, but it turns out Michael Beasley has now bounced from the bubble. That's right, the newly signed Michael Beasley. Erstwhile Brooklyn Net Michael Super Cool Bees Beasley. And look, I'm a bit surprised by Beasley because I would have put money on the fact that he already had it rather than just like caught it then. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, so two players at 322, pretty good rate for a bubble, you'd think, but you'd also like it to be zero. But anyway, look, it's pretty weird. The league and the union said that these tests were taken before the sort of quarantine ended. So it's people who would have actually picked up the virus at home or on the plane. So the chances of them spreading to teammates were apparently small. I don't know about that if they're on a plane, but look, hopefully we get more news on the positive tests and whatnot. Other bubble news, Harrison Barnes has got it. So he hasn't left Sacramento. He was the fourth member of the Kings to apparently have come down with it. So he didn't travel with the team. So there you go. Other news, speaking of the Kings, Rashawn Holmes got busted breaking out of the campus for a fucking Uber Eats pickup. Good job, Rashawn. And Houston's Bruno Caboclo, 2 years from being 2 years away. He's also violated the bubble. Caboclo apparently left his room during the initial in-room quarantine, which is obviously a very big no-no. He replied, "I didn't realize I couldn't leave my room. What the fuck do you think a quarantine is, Bruno, you idiot?" Anyway, and Rashawn was like, "Oh, I went to an unauthorized area to pick up an Uber Eats." And everyone's like, "You fucking idiot, Rashawn." And he's like, "Oh, no. But Kelly Oubre tweeted out that it was cool." And then Kelly Oubre had to do a double back and go, "Oh, whoops, my bad." Look, if you had money on Kelly Oubre Jr. being the mastermind behind sabotaging the Sacramento Kings and other NBA stars from going to pick up Uber Eats, I think we're putting a lot of stock in Kelly Oubre Jr. There's also a reason why he's been like happily traded by a bunch of and shopped by the teams he's already been on. Anyway, look, heartbreaking news from the bubble. Ben Simmons couldn't shoot a fish back into a lake. We all made our jokes. I made a couple. It was pretty funny. Ben Simmons turning to throw a fish into a lake, banked it in off the deck. Oh boy. Not only can he not shoot threes, can't shoot a fish into a lake, people say. I say, fuck that. Sixers actually tweeted out a video today of their one of their first big 5-on-5 practice runs. A big Simo's just out there splashing threes. That's fucking great news for NBA Australia and Sixers fans. The Aussie Sixers, complete with Aussie Matisse Thybul and Brett Brown. Boomer's coach. That's good. But the actual really sad news to come out of the bubble is that Ryan Rowdy Brockoff has had to leave the Sixers and return to Dallas, where he lives, because his wife apparently has tested positive and she is high risk. And obviously they have a very small son, Jack. Same as old mate over here. So look, I think I tweeted this out and chucked it on Facebook, but prayers up to recurring guest and friend of the show, Ryan Rowdy Brockoff. All the love in the world going towards he and his missus and the wee fella. And hopefully, you know, she's all okay and hopefully Rowdy can join the team. But really, that's not the most important thing at the moment. The most important thing is her health. So best of luck to you, Rowdy, and the Brockoff clan. Nice. All right, other news, Victor Oladipo. We mentioned this on last week's show with Lakers fan Tim. He was like, "Yeah, look, nah, don't want to play, but I'll go hang out." And everyone's like, "Well, that's fucking weird." Now he's like, "Nah, I might be good to go, bro." Everyone's like, "What is it, yes or no, Victor? What the fuck, mate?" Turns out, looks like he's leaning towards maybe I will. And then everyone's like, "Well, does he get paid?" So there's now a big stoush between the league and the union, the players' union, about whether or not Victor, who said, "Yeah, look, I'm going to go to Orlando, but I'm not going to play." And the league are like, "Well, if he's healthy and he's sitting out, why are you paying him to come to Orlando?" And then the team were like, "Yeah, fuck it, we're going to pay him." So I don't know, it's a big sort of storm in a teacup if you ask me. But fascinatingly for the Pacers, if he does play, it does, again, put the fear of God back into all that all the teams in that 4-5-6 range in the East. It's the Philly and the Miami bracket. A Victor Oladipo-led Indiana team is a much more dangerous team than without. Other news, LeBron and AD aren't going to wear social justice jersey messages, nor is Jimmy Butler. He's going to wear no name on the back of his to show that if he weren't an NBA player, he would be, quote, no different than anybody else of color. That's pretty good. But I don't know, for me, this is just a missed opportunity to get a 23 Lakers group economics jersey. That's a shame. Group Beckman Economics. League approved. Nice one. And finally, look, there's already been Twitter mentions of this, of some particularly, I don't know, fairly hot ladies saying, oh, I've already been invited to the bubble, really does bring up the question, who gonna be fucking? I mean, what's going on? Are we expecting all these young, healthy NBA players to go sans banging for a couple of months? Really does throw this up in the air, doesn't it? It's a bit of a weird one. Jesus. Bit strange. Anyway, but best of luck to them all, I say. And finally, Woj got suspended by ESPN. It appears there was like no actual real official sort of thing, but it seems like he's been suspended for 2 weeks. And you know that he's just punched a wall. And it's all because he said, fuck you, back to a US senator who sent out a giant press release lambasting the NBA for its stance on Blue Lives Matter, you fucking idiots, and China. So there we go. Woj responded, in turn, fuck you. And the senator snitch tagged him and gave up Woj's email to the entire fucking internet in the meantime. Like a fucking piece of shit. And anyway, Woj just said, fuck you. And to be honest, Woj is not wrong, because this guy is a fucking piece of shit, and fuck him. So blow it out your ass with your performative politics, you fuckwit. Good job, Woj. Hashtag free Woj. Nice one. All right, we're going to do a quick top five season, are we? Top five season! Top five reasons to break the bubble in NBA. Number five, you're going to play golf with Chuck Barkley, and he shanks it so badly it goes off campus. Suddenly you've broken the bubble. I don't think Chuck will be down there, will he? He already got sick and everyone got the scary god in him. Anyway, number four, you're on a fishing boat that goes too far out into sea in order for Big Simo Ben Simmons to have any hope of throwing his fish into it. Aw, that's not nice. Number three, to get your Uber Eats order. Fucking idiots. Number two, an Instagram / Twitter model hooker. What? Is wanting you to come pick her up. It's like, can she just get an Uber in? No. This is so weird. I don't know what's going to happen with the fucking bit. It's going to be pretty funny because, look, who doesn't love a bit of fucking? NBA players love a bit of fucking. And it's going to be without it. And the top five number one reason to break the bubble is if a Kardashian calls. Simo, do you reckon you'll shoot that one in? Who knows? All right, good stuff. All right, righto, let's get into the time machine, shall we? And the big fun news is, that's right, we've got a sponsor for NBA Australia Time Machine. Woo, that's right. NBA Australia Time Machine is brought to you by thedailyliquor.com. We had this in Friday's Yeah Nah videos. If you're in Melbourne under lockdown right now, there's only one way to survive it, and that's by getting a bunch of beers delivered to you. You can get Sample, Dos Blocos, Dos SBA. The awesome pineapple beer that they've got. What is it? The Mary. Oh, it's goddamn awesome. Delicious. Anyway, you go to thedailyliquor.com. They'll deliver it to your door. We're talking booze delivery and booze. And on top of that, free booze, because if you enter the code STRAYA, all caps, when you order something, they'll chuck in a free sixer. That's right, a free six pack of the delicious Dos XPA, which you would have seen me drinking on Friday's video, and it's unreal for free. Seriously, we're giving you free beer, mate. I can't do anything fucking more for you at this point. Seriously, thedailyliquor.com, free beer, offer code STRAYA, all caps, and you're laughing if you're in Melbourne. It's the only way you can do this second fucking lockdown, I'll tell you what. Yeah, so anyway, there you go. Melbourne, use the code STRAYA, get some free beers. Thank us later. Love your guts. All right, let's do the NBA Australia Time Machine for this week, shall we? And then we'll get to our chat with Peter Hooley. Here we go. Oh. Yes, NBA Australia. June 25, 1999. Actually, the latest a finals game has ever been played, which is pretty interesting, really. This is Knicks Spurs Game 5 of the 1999 finals. A fascinating year. Don't forget, lockout year. Everything gets played in 1999. It's all pretty crazy. But the Spurs win this game, 78-77, Game 5, June 25. And it's just a crazy story just to even get to that exact point, though, isn't it? Because the Knicks get into the playoffs as an 8 seed, beat Miami, injured-ass Patrick Ewing. They've got LJ, Latrell Sprewell, Allen Houston, a newly acquired Marcus Camby. The Knicks basically keep pace with the Heat. Allen Houston hits the runner with 0.8 of a second left in Game 5, wins the series. Absolutely incredible, because they become, what, the second team in NBA history to win as the 8th seed after the Denver knocked off my beloved Seattle Supersonics in 94. Anyway, the Knicks then go on to play the Dikembe Mutombo-led, ironically, because the Nuggets team that obviously beat the Sonics were led by Dikembe. Now he's on the Hawks, and he's like, "I'm Dikembe, the Knicks will have no chance against us, the Hawks." And predicted that the Hawks would win, and the Knicks swept them. Then they beat the Pacers in a 6-game series. Went up 2-1 over the Pacers thanks to Larry Johnson's bullshit 4-point play. Absolutely wild scenes. And then the Spurs, I mean, on the other side, they just beat KG and the Wolves in 4, swept the Lakers and the Blazers to make their first finals, which was crazy. So good on them. A bit of insight from a couple of Knicks fans I'll have at the end of this one. A couple of mates, obviously having lived in New York for a while, you get a couple of Knicks fans' mates. They live their sad existence. We laugh at them. That's how it goes. But the Spurs, look, they win this in 5. But it's a fascinating series. Game 1 is really a bit of a back and forth one. Then the Spurs kick it into gear, win at 89-77. Game 2, look, the Spurs kind of killed him. 80-67. Knicks win Game 3. Love this. In New York, 89-81. It's like, here we go. We've got a series. And then the Spurs turn around, win Game 4, go up 3-1, 96-89. And win a nail-biter in Game 5, as mentioned, 78-77. Classic, incredibly weird series. The Knicks never felt like they had a chance to win it. They were an 8 seed, taking on an all-conquering Spurs team in a lockout year. But, you know, lockout year, something funky could happen. Anyway, this game, Sprewell leads New York. He's fucking amazing in this series and in this game specifically. I love Sprewell. I have Sprewell t-shirts. I don't have a Sprewell jersey, but I need to figure that out right now. 35 points for Spree, 10 rebounds, 16 points for Allen Houston. Larry Johnson, 7 points. Marcus Camby, 7 points. Not helping, fellas. What are you doing? I mean, the tough part is as well, the Knicks probably should have won this. They're actually up in the last couple of minutes. What are they up? Like 77-75. And then free throws, Avery Johnson's famous shot with 47 seconds left. And poor Knicks fans. This is just brutal to think about. You could have won it. You probably should have won it. You were up. You were up for the entire second half of the last quarter. What are you doing? Anyway, just not great. Like 27 minutes of Marcus Camby, 7 points, 7 rebounds. You know, it's tough scenes, tough scenes. They shoot 44% from the field. And that's on 72 shots for an entire game, which just hurts your fucking brain now. They hit 1-3 in this game. 1-3. We've come a long way, baby. They only took 9 threes as well in this entire game. But anyway, weird, weird, weird game for the Knicks. And on the San Antonio side, Big Timmy Duncan, 31-9 for him. Avery Johnson has 8 points, 9 assists. David Robinson, the Admiral, has a shit shooting night, 15-12 for him with a block. Mario Eli, love Mario, 10 points for him and 11 points for Jaren Jackson Sr. off the bench. Sean Elliott has a rough one, but look, Spurs get over the hump. Pretty weird game. And Spurs win their first ever title, thanks to Timmy D leading the way. He had a pretty good series, I guess you could say, you know? 27-14 is pretty good. Just in terms of like, oh, is that a good number? Yes, yes it is. With 11 blocks of the series as well, not bloody bad. But anyway, look, first of 5 Spurs titles that would finally wind up in 2014. The Knicks have only made the playoffs 5 times in the 20s since. That's pretty cool. Still the only 8 seed to make the finals, though. But still, just years upon years upon years of Knicks futility followed this one. And it's, look, it's a tough one for the Knicks fans. So here's what a couple of them sent me saying, look, this is my favorite playoff year because there were no expectations at all. That way, there was no way for the team to disappoint. So good. Between the strike, Spree's insanity, the mediocre regular season, it was just loose and awesome in May that year. Loose and awesome. That sounds like the title of your sex tape. And my other buddy says, look, the only game 5 that mattered in that playoffs is Allen Houston's running jumper. Yeah, that runner in the paint to beat the Heat. And don't troll me, Jimmy, on the four-point play. That was a true foul. He held his arm on the pull-up. Get the fuck out of here. But anyway, the Knicks vanquishing the two most hated teams in all of NYC at that time because the Red Sox weren't good yet. With a few epic finishes were truly special. Even though everyone knew they were on their way to a finals, we were all but certain to lose. The garden shook when LJ hit that shot. I've never seen anything like it. He also added in the fact that it was his bar mitzvah year. That's fucking great. Nice one. All right, so there you go. The Knicks, an exercise in futility since 1999. The Spurs, an exercise in absolute excellence since then. So pretty good stuff. All right, let's give away That's Not a Knife, NBA Australia approved performance of the night. Then, shall we?
That's not a knife. That's a knife.
Oh, look, you could give this to Timmy Duncan if you were a boring-ass loser who didn't appreciate the sheer insanity of basketball. Because, look, anyone can average 27-14 and shoot 53.7% in a series and win finals MVP. But motherfucking Sprewell nearly won this game on his goddamn own self. Fucking Spree, I love him. 35 points in this game, 13-27 shooting. 10 rebounds, couple of assists, couple of steals, only 3 turnovers in 42 and a half minutes. The rest of the team shot 19 of 45 combined. Fuck. At least Timmy Duncan had the Admiral David Robinson to fucking lean on. Spree's out there doing it by himself. Carries the team. Damn near scores half their entire total points. Jesus. Meanwhile, you got a 22-year-old Timmy Duncan carrying, what, a 33-year-old David Robinson. Spree's just in his prime. Out there, absolutely crushing it. You've got a hobbled Larry Johnson. Allen Houston can't hit the side of a fucking barn for the goddamn series. But look, he averaged 21 points at Houston, but Spree was on a plane by himself for this series. 26 points a game, 6.6 rebounds, almost 3 assists. He was unreal. So for game 5, I'm going to give it to Spree. But look, Timmy Duncan, obviously, his excellence is well-founded. He was incredible all series, 27.4 points, 14 rebounds, 2.4 assists. He's incredible. We know that. He had 31 in this one, 12 of 22 from the floor, 9 rebounds, 2 assists and a block. Would it have been a different equation had they been going up against a healthy Marcus Camby and a healthy Patrick Ewing and a healthy Larry Johnson? Yes, it really would have been. Would the Knicks have won? No. They wouldn't have. Let's do a spud of the night.
Spud, 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 it is spud of the night.
Look, Sean Elliott and the Admiral tried to shit the bed. They tried so very hard to shit the bed in this game. Avery Johnson goes 4 of 10. The Admiral goes 5 of 14. And Sean Elliott goes 0 of 4. Jesus. So you've got, what, 3 of your starters combining to go 9 of 28. Jesus. And Mario Eli chucking in a pretty rough 2 of 6. He did hit 2 threes though. So Timmy Duncan just wouldn't let them shit the bed and he won the game. So good on him. But the rest of the Knicks is really the spud of the night, particularly banged up LJ. 3 of 10 shooting, including 0 of 3 from downtown. 7 points, 5 fouls. 6 rebounds. Jesus. Allen Houston wasn't capital B bad either, but he wasn't capital G good either. 8 of 17 for 16 points.
Kobe.
7 boards, 5 assists, 4 turnovers. Yeah, tough one. The best is still probably Chris Dudley. 15 minutes in a game 7, Chris. 0 of 0 from the field. 1 rebound, 4 fouls, and nothing else. I mean, look. We shouldn't expect anything from Chris Dudley because he's Chris Dudley, but I also still think you should expect more than 1 rebound and 4 fouls in 15 fucking minutes. What are we doing? Jesus, tell you what. All right, and finally, better than Lonzo Ball.
Lonzo was the best player in high school. He was the best player in college. You think you're going to get to the pros and be like, I made it to the pros, now I can be average. We're coming for everybody.
Coming for everybody. How about a bit of an old... a young old Kurt Thomas, because he's old as shit otherwise, right? But, look, you know, I don't know, do you reckon I've made enough about this game and like how the actual Knicks led this game in the last 3 minutes? They're up 77-75 and then lost it. Tim Duncan makes free throws Avery Johnson hits a shot, wins the game. I mean, we've talked about the Avery Johnson shot here before. Big balls, 47 seconds left in the game. Goes up and absolutely crushes it. Hits the two-pointer. Spree misses a two-pointer from 14 feet with 29 seconds left. And misses another one later. It's just tough. It's just so tough. I don't want to ram it home for the poor Knicks fans, but look, they probably could have won this game. And just the end of this game seven is a tough one. It really is. You're up, but still. Right. Anyway, young Kurt Thomas better than Lonzo Ball in this one because, you know, he was young. There wasn't too many other young players on these ones. I mean, we'd probably give it to Tim Duncan. He's 22. That's pretty bloody good. What do you think? Yeah? I mean, Kurt Thomas was older than that. He was 26 at this point. Marcus Camby, not bad either. So, look, either way, Marcus Camby for the series. Averaged 9.6 points, 7.8 rebounds, 24 years old. That's more than Lonzo's ever averaged in a playoff series. So, we'll give it to Marcus Camby. Or how about Tim Duncan for a series? 27.4 points, 14 rebounds. I don't know about you, but that's a little bit more than Lonzo's ever actually had in his playoff career as well. Same age, so what do you reckon? You reckon Lonzo can go into these playoffs and average 27-14? Yeah, probably not. Probably not. Jeez. Brutal. Anyway, 1999 NBA Finals, Game 5. Knicks crap the bed. It's just a tough scene. I don't want to shit on Knicks fans too much, because it hurts. But it's funny, so fuck him. Right, anyway, there you go. Let's move right along. Thanks to thedailyliquor.com. That was NBA Straya Time Machine. Remember, go to thedailyliquor.com. Enter the code Straya. If you're in Melbourne, you'll get delivery and you'll get a free sixer on top of what you get, which is fucking great. I'm giving you free beers. I love it. All right, and now let's go to Peter Hooley and my chat about a whole bunch of different stuff. It's very fun. Enjoy.
Hi, this is Ryan Brockoff, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, I promised him at the top of the show, he's an NBL champion. He is, he really is. He's the third former Ballarat miner to come on this show, which is amazing. He can solve a Rubik's Cube in under 40 seconds. You might have seen him prowling a sideline near you. He's one of the hosts of Trash Talk, a podcast I was surprised to learn wasn't about the proper functionality of municipal waste management. It's the Killsife killer himself. It's bloody Peter Hooley. Hooley, how you going?
Good. The best part about introduction is probably my Rubik's Cube, to be honest. So as long as people focus on that, and we'll be all right.
Look, if people look back in 2020 and go, look, the entire year was a waste, you'll be able to put your hand up and go, nah, I can now solve a Rubik's Cube in under 40 seconds, fuckheads.
Well, I was always, I actually learnt it. Being an SA country boy, I played in Albury Classics growing up. And we had a big bus trip that started like 5 a.m. on the way every year. And one of the years, one of my mates there, we picked him up on the way and he's like, oh, I can solve Rubik's Cube. So he taught me for like 8 hours, all the steps, and it just stuck with me. I pulled it out in college a couple of times and it kind of helped me get my current missus. And then I was like, well, what better things to do in lockdown than try and break my record? Yeah.
That's great. I also, look, it takes a very special lady to be impressed by a bloke solving a Rubik's Cube.
Yep.
That's pretty great. Good on
it. It's something different. It was around the time of after basketball was starting to wrap up and we'd had some success over there. And I was like, basketball, what's going to set me apart from the rest? So that was probably the most obscure thing I can think of.
That's great. So what have you guys been up to during the second round of lockdown? I mean, we've just hit another one here in Melbourne. What's been actually going on?
Not much at all. I think we just started to get back into, we signed up to a new gym, kickboxing gym, and was really trying to just get back into that routine and really go from there. And then obviously that got 2 weeks in, we got locked down, but they let us hire some equipment. So basically just do a spin class at home every morning into some other stuff and just trying to get in some good shape.
That's great. Jesus, better than me. I fucked my foot after fucking my back. And so I'm just like leaning right. And we've now got like a brewery sponsorship for NBA Australia. So I'm just leaning into being the world's fattest bastard. So it's pretty good.
Literally, no matter what, if I could get any kind of like with my personal brand to grow, my thing is if I get a beer thing connected, I think I'm set for life. You don't need anything else.
No. I'm pretty sure that NBA Australia is actually just a front for me to get beer. Like, that's all I've ever done this, you know, 500 episodes. It's the only reason I've done it. And now I'm there. I'm just going to coast. That's how it goes. but anyway, you've been doing a bit of sideline reporting. I want to know, can you actually practice this? You know, in lockdown, do you, like, you know, sidle up to the missus and sort of, you know, sideline report? Just go, what's been going on?
Not really. I mean, a lot of people would. I think it's different what I do in terms of, like, the play-by-play guys. I think what they do is really takes a special set of skills and something you can really practice and get good at. I think sideline or being an expert commentator is more knowing what you're talking about. And I think, I mean, I went to school, I got a degree in journalism and a master's in communications. So it was something that I'd always been interested in was media and being able to have conversations with people. So I think that's something when I decided to step away from basketball, I wanted to become a sideline commentator, because I remember playing and there was a couple instances where you get a halftime interview and some questions some of your teammates got and I got, it's just like, this is an interesting question that you're throwing out there. And I kind of wanted to kind of change that, and I really enjoyed being able to have that rapport with players that I knew.
Nice. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Like, it's definitely it's a skill that if you're good at it, it's noticeable, and if you're just normal at it, then people just fucking forget who you are, right?
Right. Yeah, I think it's something that I really pushed when I told the NBL I wanted to be part of it, was I know a lot of the players, and even if I didn't actually speak to them personally, they still know that I played. So it's a different kind of connection that hopefully I can get more interesting answers and connections with that can come through the TV screen. And that's something I really enjoyed when I started doing this, the sideline stuff, whether it was pre-game chats or halftime chats, and something that just grew into more stuff as the season went on.
Crazy. Now, speaking of your misses, I mean, I still remember seeing your proposal pics on the old IG. Was that last year in Brooklyn? Is that right?
Yeah. About,
nice.
Probably a week ago, a year ago. So
there you go.
Yeah. That was a really awesome time. So at least I can look back at those memories in this shit show of a year.
Remember when we could go places? Now, yeah. You've also got a upcoming wedding, obviously, when you get engaged is what happens. So you've had to postpone it. Is this how this works now?
Yeah, so her family's from Brooklyn, and then we thought of what could we do. This was last year, December, when we started really putting the wedding stuff together, and we didn't want to pick America or Australia. We said it's not fair if one of our families can't travel, so we picked Koh Samui in Thailand, found a nice resort, and had a nice little intimate guest list, about 50 people, and we were at, that was set for August 21st this year, and then obviously around February we started hearing more about it, and my dad started doubting whether it was going to happen, and I was like, Dad, it's the whole COVID thing's just stuck in right now, it's in China, it's like, we'll be fine.
Oh boy.
So then we got to the point where we had to cancel it, which was really devastating, because we were really excited, saw all these pictures, had it all finally planned, which, as you know, with a wedding takes that long to plan anyway.
I reckon you, Drimmick, and Mitch McCarron need to set up like a WhatsApp support group for each other of just having to go through COVID-related wedding planning, because it's fucked.
Yeah, it's funny that it's us three, because we did Oz camps and stuff together. So we go way back, and we were both on Zoom for Mitch McCarron's wedding, which was awesome. I think it was still really just an emotional time as well for that, and you see there was 100 or so people on Zoom, it was all their families around the world, so it was awesome for them to be able to do it. And that's crossed our minds, obviously, with what's going on, but then about 6 weeks ago, we'd finished planning to do it on the peninsula here with just my immediate family and a couple of friends, really even smaller than first one, and now that's just been cancelled. So I don't know whether the world doesn't want us to get married or what's going on, but we'll get there eventually.
Jesus. Look, let's get into how you got here, basketball, life, etc. You grew up in Adelaide, right? So you got a spirit animal named Phil Smythe. I'm guessing, like, because you're slightly younger than me, so I'm going to guess that Brett Maher is one of your favorite players. Is that right?
Brett Maher and Willie Farley. That's Willie Farley was the guy that I grew up watching. And it's funny, I've actually got two, before I played in the NBL, I only ever had two jerseys that were in my in my wardrobe. One was an early days Jacob Holmes jersey because he played for Eastern Mavericks, which is who I grew up playing for in Adelaide. He was a signing then. So I had an early days 36 as well. And then I got a rookie year Joe Ingles Dragons, which now I'm really good mates with Joe. I told Joe, I said, during all this, I mean, house prices have dropped. This might help me get a house. So I might have to frame that one and see who wants it.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to get my hands on a signed Jingles Utah jersey with the city edition. So it's all the different sort of colors of orange and everything. That's proudly mounted on the wall. And I wouldn't part with that for love or money, I think, at this point. Just
yeah, no, I don't know what I'd get for it, but I couldn't get rid of it too, especially because of his rookie year and what he managed to do. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, look, in terms of your basketball career, what, there's a lot of working your way through the ranks in SA, and then you end up going to college at the University at Albany.
Oh, you got it right.
Which is one of the – I remember this because, you know, having lived in New York for years and years and years, you'd see all the ads for it on the subway and then all the different SUNY,
yep,
State University New York unis on the subway. And so it was always weird and stuck out to me that it was a university at Albany. Yep. And then I've always, in the back of my mind, I've got the Albany Patroons as the, yep, nickname in the back of my head, because that's what their sort of semi-pro team, I think it is, in Albany. Is that right?
Yep, that's correct.
There you go. Nailed it. So 5 years in the States, 3 NCAA tournaments. Is that right? Holy, yep, shit.
And, yeah, all right.
And I'll tell you what. The reason that I knew of Peter Hooley was because living in the States, you could not escape you for about 2 weeks there. After hitting the very, very famous three against Stony Brook in the America East tourney that basically booked you the spot for the NCAA tournament, didn't it, with that win?
Yeah, yeah. We're coming from a smaller conference. It's a one-shot league, so you got to win it to get in. So yeah, that for 3 years in a row.
Unbelievable. And you're all over SportsCenter for basically the next 48 hours at least. And I remember going, holy shit, that guy's an Aussie. That's fucking great. And
extremely wild, because obviously there was a lot of emotion attached to it. But I remember once everything calmed down on the court after the court storming, and then our media lady came and said, come upstairs, you got to go Skype on ESPN. And I was like, oh, goodness. So I did that. And then I was like, what do we do now? Because a lot of people don't realize that because we're a smaller school, conference, so our game's at 11 a.m. on Saturday morning.
Jesus.
The conference game. So everyone still goes, plenty of other games on championship week. And then, so I think we went to TGI Fridays just to have a drink and have some food. And obviously there's TVs everywhere and everyone knew who we were. And I remember the guys like bringing around tequila shots and he goes, here's on the house. And because we just had our championship game, obviously the whole conference was around and all the people who were like in charge, I didn't want to get caught for any violation. So we're going to have to pay for them, because the year before that, to get into the conference final, we beat Vermont and they were the overall number one seed. And we went to Chipotle and our starting center accepted a free burrito because we won. And someone in the line was behind him, was from the conference, and he got suspended for the championship game.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Oh, for a free burrito. Fuck. Yep. That is crazy. Oh, man. I remember just like having mates in New York going, hey, he's Aussie. Do you know him? I'm like, no, I don't know. That's not how it works. Come on.
Australia's real small. Everyone knows each other over there, apparently.
It's wild. But it was weird because like you would see names like yours and the sort of slew of other Aussies who are now actually, weirdly enough, you know, playing in the NBL, et cetera, would pop up in our years in New York. And you'd be like, oh, sweet, cool. And it was like one of the fun ways of being able to keep track of, you know, Australian players and how well they were doing was actually, you know, paying attention to college basketball, which I hadn't really done too much of prior to actually, you know, traveling to the States and then living there, because it's, you know, pretty hard from Australia. But, I mean, what was that like, the NCAA experience and, like, even just 5 years of uni in America? It's fucking, it's a completely different mindset and, like, environment, right?
Well, yeah, so I didn't really know I wanted to go to college until I was later, like a bit older. Because, as you said, like it wasn't that big of a deal for when I was growing up. Like I was a Duke fan myself, loved JJ Redick, but it was like Delly and Patty had just started really putting Aussies on the maps in college. Obviously, there'd still been some big names, plenty of big names before, but it became more of a common thing to get Australians over there. Obviously, the St. Mary's connection really bolstered that. And then I decided I wanted to try. And I remember my dad hired a recruiting service of my twin sister and myself, paid $5,000 each, and the guy ran away with that money, never saw it again.
Oh, no.
So I thought that was it. I was like, how am I going to get to college? And then I got scouted from 20s Nationals, which is actually, I still tell the story of, because of all the NCAA rules, we got to the airport and we got told by our coach that anyone who wanted to go to college, there was four of us at a time, might not be able to play in the Nationals because of the new rules. And I was like, what do you mean? He said, well, you won't be eligible if you play in this. And I said, well, how's that going to work? There's so many guys. And I said, yeah, everyone's the same. Anthony Jimmick, Iggy Hadzimarovic, all these guys who want to go to college might not be able to play. I was like, well, there's going to be no tournament. So they managed to get a thing passed. We got over there and it worked out well. I went to Albany and different kind of place. A lot of people don't know it's the capital of New York.
Yeah.
So I was expecting, when before I looked it up, I was like, when they told me it's like New York, I was like, oh, sweet, I'm in Manhattan, I'm in Times Square. It's not. It's definitely not.
It's a long way away.
Like, yeah, it's about 2.5 hours north. But it's still, it's, you get on the Amtrak, you'll go down there for some weekends and stuff when we can. Like, it was a lot of fun. We spent nearly every Christmas in the city with one of the Aussies' families that come over. We kind of did the rounds there, which was a lot of fun. And yeah, the tournament was unreal. I think coach wanted, he always tells, he wants everyone to experience it once in their college life. And I got to do it three times. Sam Rowley and myself, another Aussie, only guys to be able to do it three times, which was unreal. And each time just seemingly got better. When you get private charter flights and stuff, it kind of feels like you're one of the big dogs for a week.
It's pretty cool. I mean, you're a small uni, small college. You're obviously always lower seeds. Like, did you ever have like one of those games in the, you know, it's called the second round because it's not the play-in tournament or the play-in four or whatever. Did you ever have like a bit of a look at the opposition and go, fuck, I reckon we can do this. We can be the 15 seed that knocks off the 2 seed or whatever.
Yeah. So the first year, obviously my first year of college, third game in, Dion Waiters stepped on my foot, broke my foot. So I sat out that whole year and we lost. I didn't get there. And then technically my redshirt freshman year, we were playing Duke in the first round. I think we were 15 seed that year. And we're lining up against Seth Curry, Mason Plumlee and all this. And Seth Curry absolutely torched us. But we were one loose ball away from, I thought, winning that game. And it ended up falling in Quinn Cook's hands, who had a wide open layup. We missed a three and then we had a loose ball. So instead of us tying the game, they went up by five and ended up winning by, I think, 7 or 9. And then the year after that, we actually did play in a play-in game, but as the 16th seed, and we won that, which is all automatically like a big 1.5 mil for like the conference and 1.5 mil for your school or something.
Yep.
Insane for a play-in game. And then we had to line up against the overall number one seed, Florida. And I'm thinking, oh, here we go. Patrick Young is the biggest human being I've ever seen in my life. And there's actually a photo of him like complaining because he nearly broke Sam Rowley's nose. And I'm behind. And I look like, next to him, I look like a fetus. And Casey Prather was on that team, Scotty Wilbekin. And we literally, that was the most bizarre game because we knew talent alone, we were never going to get close. And we had different calls for different defenses. And we junked it up to the point of we did a triangle and two one time. Next time down, we do a zone. Then we do a box and one. Then we go man. Then we double everything. And every time down the floor, we just do something different. And we made it real competitive. I think we only lost by a few in the end. And it was the only way we're going to get close to winning. But even still, I'm in the back of my mind, I'm like, this could be a blowout. We're not winning this one.
Yep. That's the way, like, you know, it tends with lower seeds, right? They usually come from smaller colleges and they do have like different looks. Like, it's the same with college football as well. You'll have like a random team that plays like a three back set or just plays strictly wildcat and their defense is always fucking weird. And it's usually to, as you said, junk up a game and give yourselves like a bit of a puncher's chance just to hang.
Yeah. I mean, you get those teams that Florida Gulf Coast was one of the teams we were watching one year that had the Cinderella story. And it's those teams that just get really hot. And they just ride that momentum. And we never had that really hot game when we needed to, which would have been nice. You want to be the first one to do it. No one had seen it. And then UMBC from our conference did it a couple of years ago against Virginia, which was insane. Just they got hot and they just got it done. And I'm like, that's a story that gets to be told over and over and over.
Love it. So do you have to buy a beer in Albany like ever again?
I don't think so. And already kind of had those connections when we were going through. And it was all because a lot of people thought when it came to knowing like the bars, there's only a few really good bars in Albany. But college is the best part about it is a lot of times like Tuesday, Thursday nights is dollar beer nights.
Yep.
That's the one time that you can afford to try and pretend to be a good bloke and buy rounds for your mate because it's not going to break your bank. But I made a point of early on in once I started going to the bars, I'd chat to the bouncers because the line's obviously huge, but some mates would be. Then I just chat to the bouncers. And by the time it was the last couple of years, I was already really good friends with them. So I had a lot of, they love basketball and stuff, and we'd have a lot of chats. And I'd just be a 20-minute chat. So then by the time it was like, when we go to bars, they just let us all in, and that was kind of awesome to be able to. And everyone would be like, "Oh, you're just letting him in because they're the superstars on the bar." So, and they'd just be like, "No, I actually know the guy. Actually, makes an effort to ask how my day is." And that's when I realized, if you're not a complete prick to people, things actually can turn out all right to you.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things. Like having spent years and years and years as a bartender, all we ever ask for is like a little bit of, you know. Human decency a lot of the time, and you'll get like amazing service if you're just not a prick. Like that's how it goes.
Well, that's why if you're nice to a bartender, all of a sudden your vodka lime soda has a bit more vodka in it.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden you're laughing.
It's great. I do have to ask. I mean, so very sadly, your mum passed away like just before you hit this amazing, miraculous three to get you to the tournament, and you dropped just that immortal line, when you've got angels watching, you can do anything. Like, did that just come off the cuff? Like, that is just incredible.
Yeah, it was obviously, that was a real emotional time for me and my family. And I remember, as I said, the game's at 11 o'clock and I didn't sleep well before at all because I'd already been to the tournament twice. And I hit a clutch three the year before in the championship game with like 30 seconds to go. So you never envision it happening twice, but I was just so nervous because I just wanted to win this one for obviously everything that had happened. And I was just didn't know how I was going to go about it. And that's the most nervous I'd ever been for a game. And I'd played absolutely horrendous. Our whole team did. We didn't hit a three the whole day. And it just happened to all fall. And the more I looked at it, the more I realized that everything had to be perfect for, obviously they missed the free throw and my teammate Ray took a bad shot, and then obviously the way it bounced to me, and they didn't have a timeout because they could have called a timeout and ran something. So they tried to play, and it turned over. So everything had to be exactly perfect, and that's when I realized, like, this is insane of how perfect everything had to fall into place. Like, this is – it's too good to be true, and that's why I think the emotions really hit me in that instance.
Yeah, and then, it gets replayed on SportsCenter over and over and over and over again. Anyway, so a little bit of a stint in the UK. I mean, what was it like playing over there as well?
It was a bit eye-opening. It wasn't. It didn't turn out to be the best situation for me. I didn't get treated too well, and it was something. So when I was in college finishing up, I was ready. I was actually going to sign with Townsville Crocs. I was ready to roll, and then they folded. So I was like, oh, okay. And then I missed every other opportunity, and my dad was born in England, actually played for soccer for Nottingham Forest, which is why I'm a big Premier League guy. And I was like, all right, well, I'll get my passport and we'll go over there. And Reece Carter was there, who I'd already known from when I was playing or training with the Sixers, so before I went to college. But let me try this. And it was a cool little town, Plymouth. It's like on the water,
Yep. Real
isolated, but it's a different type of league. It's like we're catching a minibus where you're sitting next to someone for could be up to 10 hours on game day. So you're leaving at 6 a.m., stopping three times, getting your own food and then going to play. So it was like, it's a real different type of league than what people would be used to. It was my first pro league, and it was definitely eye-opening, but it just got to a point where I was like, I don't like how I'm being treated. And Reece and I had a couple of chats, and he said if I wanted to save my pro career, then I've got to leave, and I had to make the decision to leave.
Nice. And then you actually come back to Australia and end up playing for my beloved Ballarat Miners, which is absolutely incredible, for my old PE teacher, Mr. Hayes.
Oh,
holy shit. Yeah. Amazing.
The legend himself. Yeah, that was awesome. They were looking for a guard, and I just wanted to be close. I'd been away for so long from my family. I just want to be close to home for a little bit. My twin sister had given birth to my niece, and I was like, let me just be around family. I thought Ballarat was close enough. I didn't want to go back to the Adelaide League. I'd played there enough growing up. And that turned out to be a lot of fun. Met some good guys there, and kind of just really momentum started to roll playing in that team, and had a lot of fun playing there.
Yeah, did you live in Melbourne and travel up like Waxy Walker, or did you actually live in Ballarat?
Nah, so I lived with Craig Muller and Chris Smith. I got put in house with them, and I remember I walked in to the house, and they knew my fiance was coming to live with me. So we had the front like little room. It was a nice house, and they were down the back. I remember seeing this guy shirtless in Frio footy shorts. I thought, how are you? I thought, you back for Frio, dude? He goes, oh, no, I played for him. I said, what? And I got to know Craig, and we spent a lot of time together. And then obviously, signing with Melbourne, we became really good mates.
That's great. And obviously, yeah, well, what? Yeah, the manimal, Craig Moller, ended up basically sitting next to you, hanging out in with United, which is awesome and very, very cool. I mean, did you guys go and check out the Muller Keep in Ballarat all? You know, ride a bit of piece of tin down the giant Muller Keep, or?
The place that I can really recall from my Ballarat times is the Bluestone.
Yep, the Bluey. Bang.
Everyone puts on the map when you go to Ballarat. But we lived out in Alfreton, and had our place was kind of where people would come over. Craig and I, a lot of video gamers, we video games all the time, and watch a lot of soccer and stuff like that. So. We were pretty good both the years that I was there, and we're probably unlucky. If Craig didn't go away that first year, we probably should have gone close to winning it.
Amazing. Did you make it to Sovereign Hill? You know,
I had a ticket once, and then it was pouring with rain, so I wasn't going to go. But the tickets are pretty expensive to get in. So I was like, I don't think I'm going to do it. I'd rather go to Zagami's and just sit up. I got introduced to what Zagami's was, and I was like, this place is all right.
The price of a Sovereign Hill ticket down at Gravy Spot could get you a lot of chips and gravy, I'll tell you that much. So you end up on Melbourne United, but there was a moment there, you were playing preseason stuff with the Kings, weren't you? And you end up in China with them?
But when I got with Ballarat, I told my agent, I said, I don't want to play anywhere else. It's going to be in Australia or it's not going to be at all. And I was ready to walk away from playing, just start my media journey. But Sydney had, they were going to do a rookie camp. They had two spots left. So they're going to do a 2-day camp, and had to make our own way there. And we actually played for Ballarat. We played in Tassie, a doubleheader that weekend. And the last game was on Sunday. The flight was at 12 o'clock, 11:50 Sunday night. And we had to be at camp at 9 a.m. the next morning in Sydney. And everyone, because the game was like 3 o'clock. So everyone was on the piss before we left. And I had to just chill. And then I got to the airport. I had to wait in the airport till 5 a.m., got on a flight. And then they went there and did 2 days of testing. And apparently I was cooked, but apparently I did all right. And they said, look, they're going to take a team to China for this invitational and have another look at us. And so I didn't want to go. I'd been to China plenty of times to play. And I was like, I don't want to go to China again. But I was like, well, we'll see what happens. And then I was actually at an Airbnb on a long weekend with Craig in the city. A couple other mates, and got a call that Dan Dillon had unfortunately tore his Achilles playing, and I was there was a spot, and they wanted me at training the next day. So I was like, oh no! And I was a few beers deep at the time, so I was like, I need to put these down. And I was nervous because I was like, I'd love to stay in Melbourne. And I remember rocking up to training. It was an individual, and Dean had me playing one on one down one end with CG, Majuk, Adnam, and Dave Anderson and stuff. And I was just getting beat up. And I was like, this is not going too well for me. But he said, look, they're not going to make any decisions now. He knows I was going to go to China. He said, do that first and see what happens. And I was like, all right. So next thing I know, on a plane to China, and we were supposed to have 9 players. Dane Pinot was one of them, who was the only rostered player for Sydney. And we got there to the airport, and 2 guys' visas didn't work, so we had 7 players.
Fuck.
We got there, someone did their MCO in the first training, so we went home. So we had 6 players, and we're playing a USA Summer League team in the first game. We're down 20 at halftime, and Dane Pinot's done his ankle.
Jesus.
So our strength and conditioning coach puts on a uniform to help us get some subs. We come back and win that one, and then we go undefeated in the rest of the tournament. And win like 50K or whatever it was. And they were the Kings. Gaze was the coach, and he couldn't believe it. He goes, I didn't plan to win a game, so I don't know what we're going to do here. And then I got MVP of that tournament. And then Melbourne heard about that. And then both teams offered me and ended up going with Melbourne.
Awesome. That is absolutely fucking wild.
It was great. Already, everything's against you when you're going to China as your Australian team coming over. Anyone who's played in China knows how wild some of those games can get. And then just we had six plays, and then another one went down, and I was like, oh, this is not going to go well. But it just turned into five blokes just having a lot of fun, and somehow we just kept winning games.
That's unreal. I mean, what was it actually, you know, a couple of years with United, you win a title, dump some Gatorade on Vickerman. I mean, how did your game evolve, and like, what did you sort of like, what did you learn, like actually being at the highest level and sort of watching everybody close up, playing a bunch, like even being in that sort of system, do you think it sort of played to your strengths as a player?
Yeah, I think it did. I think it was like, obviously you come out of being like, anyone who's going to be highly touted coming out of college, like you come away from being one of the star guys in college, one of the go-to guys, and even for Ballarat for a little bit. And then I was not kind of put in my place as I expected it, but it kind of was how I wanted to play. I was a pass first guard and wanted to be known for something different, because you're going to have enough scorers who are making the big bucks. That's not what's going to get me on teams. And something my college coach said to every team we played for was like, if you want to get like good deals, you got to be a winner. You got to win games. You got to win championships, because people don't want guys who are bad for their teams. And I just always put all that aside and try to do something different. So it was just going to be passing and defense that got me to where I wanted to be. And that was having a guard in my first year, was guard Chris every day. He's one of the toughest guys to guard one-on-one that I've ever had to play against. And just every day trying to learn different things. And that first year was him, Dave Barlow and Casper, just learning different ways. If I wanted to learn more about being a point guard and how I'm about to lead stuff, I'd go to Casper. And if I wanted to learn how to be a professional, I'd go to Barlow. And then if I wanted to get my shot right, I'd go to Chris. So I kind of had every possible ingredient to try and help my game in that first year. And it just luckily grew into when I was thrown in that game one of the grand final series, and Castle went down with an injury and I had to play it a heap, I was kind of ready to step up.
Yeah. It is pretty amazing. And it's like fascinating to sort of look back on those United teams, and they're loaded, and like all the parts are really fascinatingly interchangeable, it feels like, with a couple of constants. And like even having you and like someone like McCarron, I feel like it does just lend itself to having dudes who can do a lot of different things, right?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a luxury for coaches to have when you've got someone who can do a bunch of different things, and you can change a lot of different things in the way you want to play. And it can be harder sometimes when you've got too many of those and you don't know exactly where the best pieces fit. But it was something that every team I was on with United definitely had a different mixture.
Yeah. How much shit did you give Mitch McCarron for his attempts at a beard?
I knew Mitch real well from Ozcamp stuff. We spent a lot of time together and dreading Ozcamps and hating life over there. And when I was going back, he's a good guy. He's a terrific player. And he just can't grow it. I don't know why, but he keeps trying. And he can't. So he'll have the real scruffy stuff, and then he'll come back the next day completely shaven, and he'll look 12 again.
Yep. Maybe he just needs to get on the beers. I think that might be it.
Yeah, he's never had a sip, which is something. And I always said, I was like, if you're going to have a drink, if we win a championship, you're going to have a drink. He's like, oh, maybe. But you just know that's the maybe to shut me up.
The maybe to get you off his case. Speaking of which, were you at the pub with us in Philly after the Sixers United game? I don't remember if I saw, because I was there doing media shit. And I remember standing next to our coach and talking a bunch of shit watching Eagles Collingwood. Were you there? I can't even remember.
I don't know. It depends where you are. So I had a lot of my college mates come down from.
There you go.
Across some. We went to some bar, but the game wasn't on where I was. I went up to catch up with them, and they were already in rare form. So it was late by the time I got to see them. And then I think I watched most of the game back at the hotel because my cousin was playing Collingwood, James Ash. So I was like real nervous for him. And I think I went to bed at 5:30. The game finishes late, and then we're on a bus the next morning to New York City.
Yeah, after the game, I filed like my pace sort of. Then went and met a friend of a friend at a bar in Philly, and he dragged me around trying to find any other place actually showing Eagles Collingwood. And he went to a bunch of different sports bars, harangued the poor bartenders for me, and only that sort of perfectly American fashion that you can do. And yep. I'm just like on my phone constantly going, look, I reckon it might be just this one pub that is showing it. And so we trundled along down there, and obviously all of United were there and a bunch of other media dudes that I knew. And it was fucking great. The thing is, I had a flight to Boston at like 6:30 in the morning. I just didn't sleep. And that was fucking brutal. Of course, my idiot American mate was there at the pub, like chanting E-A-G-L-E-S.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, not smart. Anyway, so that was fun. So, I mean, what's the actual past 12 months been like for you then? Like post-United, doing the gig with the NBL sideline reporting. I mean, what's that all been like?
Yeah, it's been a bit of a roller coaster, especially making the decision to step away. I kind of got to a spot in my life, my Barca, where I wasn't truly happy and just kind of was always looking for something more. I wasn't who I wanted to be. I wasn't focused, but I was just, it was taking a lot of toll on me mentally, and I wasn't a good guy back home, and I didn't think that was fair to my partner. And it kind of got to the point of, I had to be realistic of, am I going to be like, I mean, 2 years, I'm going to be 30. Am I going to be a Chris Golding in 2 years with making enough and setting my family up? And I didn't think I was. And I was like, this is just realistic and it's not making me happy. And I got offered to go up and try out for a Cairns end of the bench spot. And obviously United had a couple spots left. And I was like, I don't want to do this. I'm happy right now with my family. And obviously everything I'd been through, I realized that I was going to put my family first. That's when I was truly happy. And I decided that I wanted to stay and make my transition into media. And Melbourne gave me a chance to be their media guy, obviously being fresh out of the team, and told Dean not to worry about those last couple of spots. I wanted to do this, and then kind of just went to the NBL and said, I want to be part of the commentary team. And it all kind of went really quickly after having no talk for a while. And I was just in my element. I loved it. I loved being next to Andrew Gaze and all these kind of guys and talking about the game that I grew up playing. And I just really enjoyed it, and hopefully it came across in a different light for some people with a newer face, and just kind of all the momentum was building, and I was having a lot of fun doing it, and then had some things lined up, and then coronavirus said, hold up, you're getting a bit too ahead of yourself, let's let's pull you back a little bit. So it's been an interesting last 5 or so months, but I just hope the NBL can get back and can kick it all off again.
Yeah, nice. All right, we're going to talk about that a little bit in the year, Nas. First, we do some rapid fire. Favorite NBA team? Peter Hooley.
Oh, I'm going to have to say Brooklyn. My fiance is from Brooklyn, so I'll have to go Brooklyn.
Can't argue with that. I'm literally wearing the hat right now. Favorite NBA player?
Kevin Durant.
Ooh, the snake. What's your all-time favorite NBA jersey? Do you have one?
Oh, yes. I have a New Orleans Baron Davis jersey.
Oh, that's a great jersey. Ooh. Love it.
Yeah.
Good shit. Favorite NBL team to play against?
New Zealand.
Ooh, why is that?
Because you can't give away cheeseburgers over there.
Nice one. What was the best NBL city rivalry that you got to experience?
Has to be Perth, Melbourne Perth.
Cool, good call.
Yeah.
Best player you've actually gone against on an opposition team?
Ooh. Bryce. Has to be Bryce Cotton.
I reckon that might be the answer of about 4 or 5 guests in the last couple of months. That's fucking crazy. It's pretty good.
I got put on a lot of time to be trying to have like these one-on-one things to go and try and shut guys down. And every time I thought I was doing something good, he'd get me with a 4-point play and I'd have to shut my ass down. But that doesn't make him the toughest one I've had to guard. I don't know what is.
That's a good one. I mean, you kind of mentioned already, but best player you've played with?
Probably Chris Golding.
Yep. How many times did you ask to rub Coach Vickerman's belly?
None.
In terms of dunking, is there like one player that you just wish you could dunk on in the NBL that you played against?
Craig. Craig Mullen, now that he went to Sydney and we're still good mates. It's just something I would have been able to held over his head for a long time. Actually, or Dave Barlow.
Love it. Speaking of which, I actually kind of skipped this one. Did Dave Barlow impart any sage wisdom on you?
Saber wisdom?
Sage wisdom.
Oh, no. Barlow is one of the most – he is the most quiet genius you've ever met. And it's funny, when I first met him, someone told me, and I was like, Barlow, he's a different kind of cat. And I was like, oh, okay. I don't know what that means. And he ended up being one of my best mates on the team. He's one of my best mates now. And he's just full of, he's full of knowledge that you'd never know you needed. We're both actually avid Hamish and Andy fans, so that's our weekly catch-up is to talk about Hamish and Andy.
Nice one. Did you ever have any beef with any other players in the NBL?
I don't think so. Do I have any beef? Trying to think. No, I don't think I. Oh, well, we had the. Yeah, I'm gonna. I'll, maybe Shannon Shorter. I think everyone did from Melbourne in that grand final series, though. He was just trying to find anyone to pick on.
That's a good point. It also makes, you know, the sideline reporting gig a lot easier if you don't have beef with someone.
Oh, for sure.
Nice one. And finally, who do you like for the NBA title, in the bubble?
I think I'm going to have to go. It's too cliche. I just can't see everything, happening with the Lakers and I think when it comes down to it, to be able to have a guy like LeBron who, and you know, through the whole hiatus, LeBron's been keeping his body in tip-top shape. So I don't want to say the Lakers because I'm not a huge LeBron fan, but I just, I can't see them losing too many.
Yeah, it's just, they lose Rondo for 6 to 8 weeks. No Avery Bradley already. It's a lot of J.R. Smith and your buddy Deion Waiters, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you've still got Caruso, who gives us hope to all us receding men out there.
Nice one. All right, a couple of yeah-nahs quickly, Hooley. We do this on NBA Australia. Number one, reckon the NBL season happens by December. Yeah-nah.
Wait, before December or when they say it's going to start?
Well, it happens. Well, it starts, I guess, by December.
I'll say yeah. I've got to put that positive energy out there.
Good call. Do you reckon we actually get NBL games with fans? Yeah-nah.
Yeah.
Ooh, nice one. Well, I mean, you're seeing fans up at the AFL game, so hopefully.
Exactly.
Hopefully. Number three, could you beat the Grey Mamba himself, Andrew Gaze, right now?
No. Nah.
It's basically a trick question because no one could beat the Grey Mamba at any fucking point. How about Mitch McCarron? Yeah, nah.
Nah.
Yeah, good call.
Oh, to beat him or as a bloke?
I mean, if you want to fight him, it's all good. This is fascinating. Actually, one got sent in today that I was just going to have on today's show, but we'll just ask it now. Got sent in by Ryan Broadbent. Should the NBA pack up its Orlando bubble and just move it to Queensland? Yeah, nah.
Oh, yeah, but I don't know about Queensland, but definitely somewhere.
New Zealand?
Yeah, I mean, New Zealand's done it the best. If you had to look at it, they just said, you know what, let's try and eliminate it rather than contain it, and look what's happened.
Yeah.
Because Florida's cooked.
Yep. They're fucked. They're actually, Ryan then pointed out in the next point, if Florida was a country, it would have the fourth highest COVID-19 tally in the world behind, I think it was.
Absolutely insane. I don't know why.
Brazil, Italy. Jesus.
Dana White took UFC to an island. I don't know why they couldn't just take it off. It's already in a bubble. Take it somewhere. Or even, I don't know what Hawaii's going like. Is Hawaii cooked?
Oh, that's interesting. I never thought about Hawaii. That actually, they've got, you know, University of Hawaii and stuff over there. That'd be. I think the problem is going to be for the NBA is all the time differences and everything. They obviously want everything in East Coast time so they can keep it prime time.
That was the issue with the English Premier League. They were looking at having it in Perth. The time wasn't going to work.
Brutal. Nice one. In the future, I mean, how's this? Like, do we have you on the sidelines at the NBL season? How's this going to work? What do you reckon?
Oh, I haven't heard. I haven't heard anything about that. I would assume so. If you've got the AFL guys who are still on the field, whether you just got to be standing a little far away or they just have their own mic set, I'm not sure exactly how it's going to work. But I feel like with all this that's going on, it's going to get to a point where we're going to have to live with this thing that's not going away. So I hope so. I think it's you get more authentic connections with players and stuff. So. I hope so.
Yep.
Love but I'm not a disease expert. I'm a guy who keeps turning the news off because I'm sick of all the negativity. I just want to be positive.
Love it. All right, Peter Hooley, this has been awesome. Really appreciate you coming on. I mean, I've always been a fan of your work and as a basketball player from Ballarat through United. So this has been a fucking laugh and a half. I've enjoyed the hell out of it. Thanks for coming on.
Appreciate it, man. Had a good time. Thank you very much.
This is Mitch Creek, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right. How good was that? Bloody love Hooley. He's awesome. That was a great chat. Really massive thanks to Peter Hooley for coming on the show. He was really fun. Go follow him on IG, Twitter, all that good stuff. Subscribe to the NBL podcast that he does, Trash Talk. It's awesome. All right, we're back next week. With all the usual dumbassery, we'll do another Yeah Nahs on Friday on video, though. So keep an eye out on YouTube, Facey, all that stuff. Anyway, make sure you're following NBA Australia on Twitter, Face EIGs, all over the socials, all over, you know, all the time. Get her on NBAAustralia.com and check us a rating review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, whatever app you use on your Android phone, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever. It helps out heaps. Go get some free beers from the dailyliquor.com. If you're in Melbourne, enter the code STRAYA. You'll get it delivered with a free six-pack of DOS XPA, which is delicious. Just the code STRAYA, all caps, thedailyliquor.com, free beers. Legendary. Big thanks to From Oslo for the intro and outro song. Go check out their new band, House Hats. Their album Running Out of Time is out now, and it's awesome. Also, massive thanks to Joshua De Laurentiis, Fascinator, Gold Mines, Ramshackle Army, Iowa, Sex Jedi, Green, 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 and Dozers for all the tunes you heard throughout the show. Give them all a smash from Bandcamp, Facey, Triple J on Earth. Support them. They can't play shows. They can't do shit, so go buy some merch. NBA Australia supports Australian bands. Speaking of merch, go to nbaaustralia.com/shop. Buy a hoodie, buy a t-shirt, buy a stubby holder. We will have new t-shirts up next week. Watch out. Here we go. Legendary. All right, we're going to close out today's show with a brand new Jingles HR, and we will catch you next week, you dickheads. This is NBA Australia saying, look after yourselves, would you? And later, hosen. G'day, Joe Ingles here, head of Jingles HR, where we come up with HR solutions for you and your problems. Because yep, I'm not just a dead set Aussie legend and the owner of a lot of real estate in Paul George's head, and an amateur food critic, but when I'm not sinking threes, talking trash, blowing kisses, taking pictures of my food, and loving my kids, I'm the world's leading HR expert. So, let's get to this week's question, shall we? It comes from a Donovan in Orlando. Dearest Joe, I have been having some pretty big problems with this French bloke I work with. It's not because he's French, but I think it's because he gave me the coronavirus, which shut down our place of employment for like 4 months. And now we're coming back to work and I have to quarantine for ages with no way to get Sheila's to my pad. So I really, really, really hate this guy. Do you have any tips for getting over hating a fellow employee? Love, Donovan, Orlando. Oh, thanks for writing in, Donnie. Look, I mean, we've all had problems with our fellow workers, haven't we? I mean, just the other day, me and Cheryl from accounts got into it again about someone apparently eating her leftover cake in the fridge, to which I replied, look, if it's in the work fridge and doesn't have a name on it, then no one could be blamed for it going missing, you know? It wasn't even me. Look, I'm just saying. I'm just saying. Anyway, so look, I get it. The best way to get over this sort of stuff is to try and deal with it in person. Take the person you don't get along with for a coffee or a beer. Have a chat and just try to see things from their perspective. They might have problems at home. They might have problems with their kids. They might have had that Rona. Who knows? And if that fails, you can always bring it to HR and see if they have some exercises and KPIs to get your relationship back on track. Because organisations are only as strong as their own employees, and if those employees are at loggerheads or not pulling in the same direction as management, it can be a big problem. Especially if the other bloke is French. But just remember this one, Donnie. You only have to work together. You don't have to live with each other. Well, I mean, you know, most of the time. Yeah. Anyway, if you've got any more questions, please don't hesitate to ask. All right. That's it for this week on Jingles HR. I've been Joe Ingles. Get a job up, yeah.